Welcome to Magic 8 Ball with Melissa and Michaela. I'm Melissa Withers, Managing Partner of RevUp Capital.
And I'm Michaela Camp, Director of Platform at RevUp.
Today we are talking about how entrepreneurial machismo is literally killing us. And I want to do a sincere content warning. Today we're going to be talking about mental health, and this episode contains reference to suicide and self-harm. So please take care while listening. You know the story. Yeah. So early in 2024, I was at an event where a guy I know told an audience of mostly first-time, you know, fresh-faced founders that the best advice he'd ever been given was don't quit. This was a record scratch moment for me, and it really set me on fire about what total garbage that advice is, and just how devastating that advice is, particularly out of context. You know, entrepreneurs are twice as likely to suffer from mental health issues like depression, and founders are really prone to self-harm or maladaptive behaviors. I mean, when was the last time you went to a startup event where everybody wasn't drunk, right? There's a lot to unpack there. And this is often triggered just by the intensity of managing professional and personal responsibilities and the sort of do or die intensity of entrepreneurship. And really, culturally, within our startup ecosystems, if you express a full range of emotion, you do so at your own peril, as you can very easily be labeled as lacking toughness. I've seen it happen. I've been in the room when someone expressed even a modicum of emotion, and the takeaway was that that founder lacked toughness. And I was complicit in perpetuating this culture. I've been doing this now for more than a decade. And when I started, you know, I dove right into the deep end of the machismo pool. And affirmed a lot of those behaviors and believed them myself, you know, and it took a tragedy to dislodge me from this when someone in the Boston startup ecosystem that I loved very much died by suicide. So now I feel compelled to call it out whenever I see it, to bring it up all the time, even when it feels a little uncomfortable. And that is what we are doing here today. But we'll start off on a slightly lighter note. Michaela and I have been working together for basically her whole adult life. I stole her youth. But Michaela, when we first started working together, do you remember the startup vitamin posters that were literally everywhere? And they had cheeky slogans like go big or go home, like fail fast, succeed or die trying. I think one of them, it just said like failure is fuel, and it like hung over your desk for a while. Mm-hmm. What's your take on these posters a decade later?
Well, I mean, who could forget those posters? As you said, they were literally everywhere. But looking back, it's wild to think how out of touch they were.
Yeah.
And like, who was that for? And honestly, they did way more harm than good. They only normalized this idea that any good founder or entrepreneur is an emotionless robot.
Yeah.
They had to be stoic and always put on a brave face. And of course, they could never show any sign of fear or sadness. But spoiler alert, keeping emotions bottled up in that way isn't sustainable or healthy.
No.
And because this mentality was so more like normalized, pushing yourself to burnout or exhaustion was seen as a badge of honor or for so many people. Well, failing to recognize that burnout, anxiety, and feeling overwhelmed all the time are actually warning signs.
Yeah.
It was this weird like situation where we're saying failure is fuel, but we weren't acknowledging that if you're running on empty and ignoring the flashing lights on your dashboard, you're eventually going to break down. I know you have seen this manifest in both big and small ways in the founders you've worked with.
Yeah, it's like congratulating someone when they stayed up all night and slept at their desk, right? Instead of like looking at how that might be affecting.
There's such a disconnect.
Long term, yeah. You know, a few months ago, a founder who was navigating a particularly difficult, a very unpleasant event, you know, apologized after shedding a few quiet tears during a meeting. You know, this founder apologized for having a brief and totally appropriate, you know, human reaction. And I know she'd been led to believe that emoting in that way was a character failure, right? That somehow she was failing as an entrepreneur because she was making visible like what she was feeling inside. You know, I think that we still feel sheepish when someone else cries or when we ourselves cry. I've had tears, and even I felt like, oh my gosh, like investors weren't supposed to cry. Not anymore. You've seen me weep like a baby now, multiple occasions. But I think it just shows you how like deeply embedded our aversion to weakness is in startup culture. you know, entrepreneurship is hard. It is fraught with economic uncertainty, and it's not for everybody. But the idea that entrepreneurship is only for those with no fear and full magical immunity to all of the economic and emotional consequences that goes along with it is just totally wrong. It's wrong. And so my counter to the never quit doctrine, is if you cannot succeed, do not die trying. That's the poster I want. Like,
it's not worth
yes.
It.
Like if you cannot succeed, do not die trying. Losing isn't always winning. You know, winning isn't always losing. You know, a failed business is recoverable, but like a broken life, less so. Right. Yeah. And so caring for one's mental health can coexist with entrepreneurial ambition. You know, and now that my eyes are open to it, I see it even within myself. You know, toughness isn't about persisting at all costs. You know, sometimes the toughest decision a founder can make is knowing when to shut it down. Right.
Yeah.
And I know that like me, you are often kind of behind the scenes with founders. You know, what's a good example you saw in 2024 of a team taking a healthy approach, to tough times?
Yeah. One example that comes to mind is from a company that had to adjust to a major market shift. Like they were moving up market and there was a lot of pressure to perform because it was a new market they didn't know much about. But instead of isolating themselves into silos, because isolation often is where this happens the worst, the founders encouraged a collaborative environment across their teams. So at the outset of when making this change, they emphasized that every department's challenges were interconnected, which meant no one was facing anything alone.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't on an island.
Right.
And what really stood out was how the team completely removed the feeling of shame around those challenges because they weren't doing it alone.
Right.
And instead of hiding those struggles or feeling
embarrassed. If you're not of a shame to the person you're connected to, then you're not really ashamed.
Exactly. And shame is often where that breaks down. Like people don't bring it up because they feel such shame.
Yeah.
And because of that, what really stood out was instead of hiding those struggles or feeling embarrassed, the team embraced the shift as part of the process. Like you said, they didn't feel alone, so they didn't feel weird sharing it.
Yeah.
So leadership made it clear that the market change or lack of progress wasn't necessarily a team failure. It was a shared challenge.
Yeah.
Everyone navigated together. And mistakes or slow progress were then seen as learning opportunities, not something to be hidden or punished, because again, that shame was removed and they saw it as collective. So this allowed the team to approach the problems without the weight of fear, which encouraged open communication and creativity. Mm. And the other big part of this, which I think is so important, is leadership made space for the team to vent and reset.
You almost have to create special spaces
for
venting, right? Because they can feel counterproductive in certain meetings and environments. But if you don't create an alternative space, where does it go?
Where does it go? Yeah. Because again, most people don't realize that a change that when you're so used to something else creates a lot of frustration and it's a big adjustment.
Yeah.
Right. And because of that space and the permission to fail, as long as the lessons were clear,
right,
this mentality helped the team remain optimistic instead of just getting stuck in despair and being never going to get out. So by removing
spiral of despair.
Exactly. The pit of despair, the spiraling, which I know all too well sometimes.
Yeah.
But removing the shame and normalizing the challenge of adapting to this change together, the company didn't just survive. They came out of it stronger and more resilient.
They did.
Yeah, and it's good. And honestly, they're more connected and the people who are continuing on the journey.
Funny, I think I know what company you're talking about, but as I think about it, there's actually more than one.
Yeah.
Because that's just a thing you have to be.
You have to do. Yeah. And intentionally making those spaces, it's so important. And another thing that I think about is understanding the different experiences that people have based on race, gender, and socioeconomic status really makes a difference in how we estimate, as you said, a founder's toughness.
Yeah.
And I know you have lots of thoughts on
this. I do. I mean, you won't be surprised that the person who, said never quit was, 65, affluent, had quite a bit of success in his rearview mirror, right? I think there's a lot of privilege built into the succeed or die trying and the never quit mantras. And I think the important truth here is that many people who preach the suffering makes you stronger gospel aren't really suffering. And if they did, it was probably a long time ago. And just given the breakdown of who's know, typically in positions of power in startup ecosystems. And I think a lot of them, you know, may have never been affected by racism, sexism, or kind of felt the sharp edges of multi-generational poverty that many founders, you know, are living in today or trying to live out of today, right? You know, back in the day, there used to be a saying that founders needed enough money for rent and ramen, right? That's all you should pay yourself enough for rent and ramen. You know, I think that works for someone that has no student loan debt, no medical needs, no bills, no children, no dependents, and somebody that mostly can have supplemental income coming from somewhere else, yeah, either from savings or their family, right? But, you know, for entrepreneurs who are not born into privilege or those who have dependents or any real grown-up costs in their, yeah, lives, that's just not a viable reality. So I think the worst thing embedded in the never quit guidance is the way that it downplays the concerns of those who have no safety net. And it really glosses over how some people pay a much higher price for failure than others do, right?
Yeah.
I know we have an episode in this season on radical transparency, but I can't help but bring it up here. You know, how much suffering, you know, should a founder share with their team?
I think the real thing to take away here is you need to have a balance, right? Like when you really boil it down, there's a difference between being transparent and oversharing.
Yeah.
It's important for founders to be open about the reality of a situation, especially during tough times, but they don't need to burden the team with every single detail or fear that crosses their mind. And being vulnerable and sharing those challenges you're facing can build trust, but there's a fine line between making your team feel included,
yeah,
and making them feel like they're carrying
the weight of your feelings.
Yeah. Exactly. So for example, like
I know what you mean.
It's totally okay to say we're facing some difficult decisions ahead and here's how we're navigating them without unloading,
yeah,
anything that crosses your mind about the path forward.
Right. Because if you're clear about who's responsible for what, then you can make obvious that, you know, they're not shouldering that burden. It's
exactly
not their fault. They're not carrying that.
Yeah. Exactly. And ultimately, like where boils down is it's about giving your team enough context to feel engaged and motivated, but not so much that it feels them anxious or uncertain about where they sit or where the future is.
Yeah, that's right? Important.
I guess with that in mind, what advice do you have for people in your shoes, investors or mentors, on how they can be better allies to the founders they support?
Well, obviously never hang up a poster that says never fucking quit.
Okay, it's a step
like don't do one. That. So
exactly.
Don't put up posters that say never quit. Or the one, remember the one with the match that lights up and it says like something is contagious. Douchiness, yeah, is contagious.
Hustle culture.
Yeah. So never put a poster. Don't put a poster that says never quit. I've radically changed the way that I talk about mental toughness over the last decade. You've probably seen,
yeah,
it, right?
Oh,
you've seen me with a microphone more times than most anyone else in the world. And
or calling, you know, people out.
Yeah, I've radically changed the way that I talk about mental toughness. And I listen differently when founders like share their fears. And I've stopped, you know, immediately going into problem solving mode, recognizing that their experience and my experience may be very different. And that really, you know, first you just have to listen differently when founders are being vulnerable with you. You know, I also think very carefully before telling a founder to persist, you know, against all odds, right? Because that may not be the best advice. Again, I have said in other episodes and on this one that, you know, a failed business is recoverable, a failed life less so. Yep. And so ending up in financial ruin, losing all of your relationships, really going down with the ship, you know, may not actually be a good outcome for anyone.
Yeah.
You know, the investors are still going to lose anyway, right? So, you know, I think very carefully before telling a founder to like, keep going. But I also just talk about failure more frequently so that founders can just start to have a toolkit of understanding the spectrum of responses. Because we tend to think about like sticking on for forever and quitting.
Yep.
But that's actually a spectrum of things. There are lots of other things you can do. You know, persisting against all odds doesn't mean quitting.
Yeah.
Persisting against all odds, pulling back from that might mean finding someone else to take the company forward, which is not the same as quitting, right? You know, I like to point out that timing, luck, and access to resources, you know, often outweigh the impact of individual talent or skill when it comes to the gutter between success and failure.
Yeah.
You know, like many people who succeeded because they had great luck, great timing, and access to great resources. And many founders that I've known who have failed were very talented, had tons of skill, but they had some bad timing and some bad luck, and in many cases did not have the same access to resources. And I think changing that narrative around grit and around, you know, everything being sort of, you know, in your control and your fault, right, is an important way to make space for people to think about a bigger spectrum of outcomes, right? It doesn't mean that we can't celebrate hard work. It doesn't mean that we can't learn from failures. I mean, failures are really important, you know, but we can create safe spaces for founders to support each other. And we can proudly tell the stories that we usually sweep under the rug, you know, especially the ones that don't glamorize suffering, right? Like there are stories about people giving up on something and then having a better life.
Yeah.
We don't tell those stories. Like we just don't. I mean, we should, you know, and I think if you're an ally or an investor, you can do small things. You can pick up the tab. We did a session year with our female founders, you know, specifically at giving them some tips, you know, for creating space for mental self-care. You know, a lot of these female founders also have domestic responsibilities and they took a lot on their plate, right? And it was a small thing. It didn't cost a lot of money, but I think it opened up a door to a conversation that I know many of them appreciated. You know, I also can't stop but think what would happen if community champions sponsored mental health the way that they sponsor food, booze, and puffer vests,
amen,
right? You know, a lot of money goes into that stuff, right? And what if a place or a city or an organization, you know, made mental health support a cornerstone of their value prop for the entrepreneurs in those communities? Yeah, I think it's low hanging fruit. And yeah. I think someone could own that. And I don't know why no one has even tried.
I was gonna say, it's surprising that no one has.
Yeah. You know, and I just think overall, like pretending that good entrepreneurs don't show emotions like fear is, it's not a Darwinian way to weed out the weak.
No.
You know, unchecked, it could put American entrepreneurship on the endangered species, you know, list. So I think that's a lot about how I think about it. Yeah. But as you know, Michaela, since 2024 taught us that logic, reason, and history are useless for guiding human decisions, I think all we can do is ask the Magic 8-Ball about this topic.
I'm going to say, let's see what our friend the Magic 8-Ball has to say. Will it ever be okay to cry in entrepreneurship? I'm telling you now, if it says no, I'm disagreeing.
I'm going to shake it again.
Better not tell you now.
Oh, that's perfect.
It knew I was going to start.
Yeah, I think it's going to be complicated for a while.
It's going to be complicated.
But if we keep at it, we'll make some space and eventually.
Crying's okay.
Yeah, it'll be okay. I'll pick an episode, we'll have to cry.
Yeah.
It's a big cry. So, okay. All right. Well, thanks for joining us and we'll see you next time.